My name is Jeff, and what I want to talk to you guys about this afternoon is the idea of demystifying design. And I'm, in the 15 minutes that I have, I'm going to go through why I think design has been mystified to date, why I think that's actually not a good idea, and then we'll go through why it's good to demystify design, see how some people are doing it out there currently today, and then I'll give you some ideas about how you can do that as well as designers and as people who work with designers in the future. And I'm going to do all of that in 15 minutes, I promise. All right, so I'll start off with a real quick story. My first job out of college was this. This is where I worked. It was the Clyde Beatty Cole Brothers Circus. It was my first gig. And you know, my job there was to be an audio production person. I did sound and lighting for them. And this is where I lived. I lived in half of the back of that semi with seven other guys. That's where the ringmaster lived, up there on the right. And I came there to do sound. That was going to be my career, sound and lighting. And it was a pretty strange place. I mean, people are getting shot out of cannons. There are clowns running around. And this guy's serving your food, right, three meals a day if you chose to eat it from this. And I had a really difficult time at first kind of acclimating to the environment, understanding the language of the circus. It's kind of an old place with 150 years of tradition. And I'm trying to come in there and do sound and lighting and things like that. But over the 6 months that I spent there, day in and day out, with no days off, doing two shows a day, seeing the same show, I saw the circus 400 times in a row for 6 months. So I'm not taking my kids there ever again. But over the 6 months, I learned the jargon of the circus. I learned the cadence of the circus. I learned why things were done a certain way and why certain behaviors were taken. And I got to find, when I acclimated to that scene and that culture, I got to do what I came there to do. I became a sound man. I became pretty good at it. I got to understand how the shows went, and I got to get very good at being a sound man in the circus itself. And what's interesting is that when product teams come together to design software in many ways, this is what everybody feels like when they first join that team. Right? It's like they got invited to the wrong party. Everybody's speaking a different language. Everybody's got a different goal. Everybody's kind of wondering if they're in the right place, you know. And this is especially true when you think about designers and for people who look into design, into the design process. So the people who are not designers, and they have designers on their team, this is what the design process looks like to them. Do you guys know who this is? Who's got kids? Somebody's got kids in here. That's Sylvester McMonkey McBean. So those are the Sneetches going in on one side. The man was a con man. I mean, let's be clear about this, right? But his job was to put stars on the bellies of the Sneetches. They would go in one end without stars on their bellies, and they'd come out the other end with stars on them. And whatever happened in the middle, in this black box, was a mystery. There was a lot of churning and noise, and they came out with stars on the other end. And that's what the design process looks like to non-designers. And guess what? As designers, we really like that. Because that mystery that is wrapped around the design process, that black box, is empowering. It's powerful stuff. It feeds our ego as designers, and it drives and gives us this perception that we have control over our work. You know, it places these invisible barriers between designers and the rest of the team, and the only people who can kind of break through those are other designers, and that's okay. Because that mystery makes us feel like heroes, right? We come in as designers, and somebody says, we have this really big problem. Why don't you come in here, designer, and fix it for us? And so we come in, and we take it, and again, requirements go in one end, and shiny stuff comes out the other end, and we're the heroes that made it pretty in between with that mysterious process. In addition, that mystery insulates us, right? It's like that barrier at the rock concert where we're, as designers, we're the rock stars up on stage. That's them, right, the non-designers behind there. And we like to be up on that stage and be wrapped around in this. And people don't know what happens back there. We get to create our craft and then show it to people. And they inevitably either have to love it or not. But at least we get to do it the way that we want to do it. And what happens with that is that ends up being detrimental to the team itself, because it starts to build this misunderstanding and this lack of trust between the companies, between the members of the team. And those members of the team, then that translates into the product, the quality of the product that team is building. And then if the quality of the product suffers, then the company starts to suffer as well, and that grows. And the reasons for that is because that mystery divides the team into silos. So, and really those silos are determined really by the kind of the HR mandated job titles that we get. So if your job title is designer, you push the pixels around. And if your job title is software developer, then you put the ones and zeros in a row. And if you're a product manager, you do whatever they do. And QA people, et cetera, marketers, et cetera, right? And there's no communication between those silos. And without that communication, we can't build a shared language. There's no common understanding, and everybody is speaking their own unique language, the language of designers, the language of developers, the language of product managers, and they're aiming for different targets. Without that common language, not everybody is shooting for the same target. And so what that leaves to do, what that actually leaves the challenge with is the project manager, and I'm not sure why Frodo was the choice for the project manager, but he kind of led that group of that motley crew on their quest. But the project manager is left with this shuttle diplomacy, right? The project manager goes over to the designer. Designers, what do you guys need? Well, we need requirements. And so he goes over to the product managers. Product managers, what do you guys need? Well, we need to figure out what's feasible. And so he runs over to the developers. And the project manager shuttle diplomacy will get you to an end state, but without that conversation between those teams, it's going to be a lackluster, low quality end state, because what's necessary to build a high-quality product is transparency. The transparency between the silos is the key component of trust. It builds trust between the team members, and with that trust and with that transparency, they start to build a common language. And when everybody starts to build a common language, the quality of the work, the productivity, and the general team morale skyrockets. And this is nothing new. This was a gentleman by the name of Robert Daly in 1978 in the journal Management Science wrote a study called, and I love it, it's called The Role of Team and Task Characteristics in R&D Team Collaborative Problem Solving and Productivity. Talk about a dude who needed Bitly back in the 70s, right? And what he said was, to sum it up basically, he said that the collaborative problem-solving productivity relationship. In other words, the relationship between collaborative teams and problem-solving, the productivity of problem-solving, was directly correlated, either spikes or tanks, based on four specific factors. And those are task certainty, so the team knows what it's working on, the team is clear. Task interdependence, so that task makes sense with everything else that the team is working on. The size of the team, let's keep the teams to a relatively small size. And team cohesiveness. How tight, how well does that team work together? How well do they work? When these four factors are firing on all engines, the team productivity and the problem solving soar. And when they don't, team productivity and the quality of the work tanks. And so what I want to say today, it's on us as designers, as user experience designers, visual designers, interaction designers, product designers, whatever it is that you do, you work on a team, we must demystify the way that we work. We have to open up our processes to bring others into, through that transparency, to bring others into the design process, teach them what we do and how we do it, right? Bring them into it and show them how the sausage is made, right? And it's not a pretty process. And what they learn, what they get from it, when we open up that process and we bring those, bring others into the design discipline, is this. Design is really hard. It's a balancing act with a bunch of decision points that go into every single pixel placement on the screen, right? So we have to balance the customer, specifically. Maybe not on our head, but nevertheless. We have to balance usability. So who's the customer? Can they use what we're building? We have to balance the brand, right? Is what we're building actually on brand and relevant to the company, right? And we have to balance the needs of the business. Can we actually make money doing this? And that goes into every single decision point that we make. And as you work closely with your team and you start to kind of show them what goes into every design decision and every pixel, they start to participate in that conversation. They start to understand what goes into that conversation, and they start to contribute to that conversation. And when they contribute to that conversation, they start to see their fingerprints in the work. They're just like, well, we talked about this together, so I know why we're doing this, and I understand why we're building the product this way, and now I feel like I own it a little bit more. Instead of me coming to a developer as a designer and saying, here, build this beautiful thing that I just designed, they know why it looks that way and why the button's in the bottom right or in the top left or why the navigation is here, why the content is this way. They own it, and they become much more involved in it. And what's interesting is I wrote about this topic in A List Apart last year, and as you can imagine, a bunch of designers jumped down my throat. especially this guy. He was pretty pissed off. And so just to give you a sense of some of the words that he used in this particular response to the article I wrote, he talks about this idea being a delusion. It's an unproductive stuff of... Right, pandering to people on the team by seeking opinions, wayward and uninformed opinions, and dilutes quality. And that's totally true. He's absolutely right. If no one has been, if that person has not been involved in the design process ever, that's right. They're just going to lob these grenades over there. Make it blue. Put it in the top left. Put it in the top right. They're not going to know why. They're just going to toss these things in there. But if you bring them into the design process, those wayward opinions start to become informed and slightly more correct and actually improve the quality of the product. The other pushback you get from designers that says, hey, does this make everybody a designer? Where's my value? Maybe it makes everybody a designer, but not really. What it does is it shows them, again, the challenges of being a designer and what goes into the process itself and makes your role as a designer that much more valuable because now they understand what you do. You're outside of the black box through that transparency. And the last thing that designers push back on, and this is interesting, sometimes we put something on the page, we play something on the screen, we do a particular thing simply because it looked good. There's no amount of academic experience, psychological insight that it simply felt right as a designer. Maybe it's pattern recognition, I don't know what it is, but it felt right to put it there. And sometimes getting up in front of your team and saying, you know what, I don't have a good reason for why I put that there. It just looked right, trust me, let's test it and let's move on from there. And that's tough to reveal, that's tough to say, you know, well, sometimes this is what went into the design decision. And that's okay, and let's figure out if that's the right approach. So to give you a sense of how others have actually done this in the field, this is a gentleman by the name of Michael Pollan. He gave this terrific TED talk about how he had to build this greenhouse in London, in the UK, where the ground is constantly being quarried. And so he had to build, it's called the Eden Project. And what he looked for inspiration, and he talks about, is he looked to nature. He looked to chemistry, and then he looked to biology, pollen grains, for inspiration about how to build this. And he shared this with the world and said, you know what, I'm not a genius. I use these other disciplines to solve my design. Do you have any other ideas from these disciplines or others that can help me be a better architect, and how can I help share that with the world? Another example, this is my friend Mark Sheff. He's an illustrator in Brooklyn, New York. He gets on YouTube, on Ustream, every so often, once a week, every other week, and he shows people how to illustrate. He draws characters. He goes through the process with people live. He shows them how he uses the tools. He demystifies the tools. He demystifies the process. And at the end, he uploads the raw files up there. And that doesn't take away from his strength as an illustrator and makes him stronger. This is Typekit, demystifying typography, one of the least understood fields of design. Terrific UI here. What they've done is that when you select one of these sets, one of these characteristics of font on the right, it shows you exactly what's going to happen, width, X height, etc. It's terrific. And so how can you do this in your office today? How can you bring this to your team, right? The first thing you can do is start drawing together. You know, make ideation inclusive. Bring people together and level the playing field by teaching them the golden rule of interaction design, or this is the big secret of interaction design, right? Is that if you can draw these three shapes, you can draw any interface. That's out there today, right? People say, I can't draw. Can you draw a circle, a square, and a triangle? Then you can draw an interface, right? Level the playing field. Show raw work, and show it often, and show it going through its various phases so people understand that Photoshop mocks don't just appear out of nowhere, that there's a process, and let people weigh in during that process. And then, in addition, teach the discipline. Don't hold lunch and learns necessarily unless you want to, but as opportunities arise and say, okay, I did this because it was a good use of white space or because of a particular hierarchy, and this is what white space is, and this is what hierarchy is. And as you're going through it, demystify the jargon itself, right? So just to give you a sense of jargon, right, does anybody know what this word means? This is what it means. It's a term from carpentry. It's the groove or slit from carpentry, right? Does anybody know what this means? All right? It's a medical term. It's a scab, right? Can you imagine going to the doctor? The doctor says, you've got a sanguineous crust. You're like, oh, fuck, I'm going to die, right? Right? It's not. You have a scab. You're going to live. It's going to be fine. We get into sort of more designing terms. You guys feel a little bit better about cognitive load, right? Kind of everybody starts to feel about what that is, right? Kerning, yeah, that feels good. It's what it is, right? It's demystifying the jargon, is what it's all about. And I need to wrap up. So be transparent with your work. Share your ideas with your teams. Get out there and send your newsletters out to the companies and say, this is what we're doing, this is why we're doing, and this is how it's affecting the product that you're working on. Because we don't want any more strangers in a strange land. What we want to do is level the field. And I'll close with this point. We, as designers, are being invited to everybody else's parties. Designers should learn how to code. Designers should learn how to write. And I totally agree with this, but this is the tweet never sent, right? Where are the developers who learn how to design? Let's start that. Let's bring them into it, and let's teach them how to design. Thank you guys very much for your time. Really quick, I have a book coming out in June. Please pre-order it.